Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Okay, it's obviously a big day today with Super Tuesday, including right here in the great state of North Carolina. I'll go through all my picks and tell you who I think you should vote for here in North Carolina, which some would say is a violation of the federal law and the Johnson Act, which I'll get to, the Johnson Amendment. I'll get to that later, but I wanted to give one of the people that actually is on my list running in the Republican primary for U.S. Senate. It's a big deal here in North Carolina against one of our sitting senators, Tom Tillis, is my friend. Larry Holmquist. So he's calling in today just to do a little shout out. Sorry we couldn't get you in here sooner, Larry, but it's good to hear from you. How are you?
Well, I'm fine, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for asking. So let everybody know just a little bit about who you are, and then we'll talk about this this mountain you're climbing and trying to take out a sitting U.S. senator, because that is no easy task.
All right. Well, that sounds good. Steve, I'm 65 years old. I am a lifelong Christian, a lifelong patriot, and a lifelong conservative. And those three influences shape everything that I am as a person. They shape how I think, how I speak, how I act. I have been married to my beautiful wife, Cindy. It'll be 35 years in June. We've lived in North Carolina since 1988. Neither of us were born in North Carolina, but we've lived the majority of our lives here, and we absolutely love it. We're very active in our church here in Greensboro. And we're also very active in the Piedmont Emmaus community here in our area.
So what? This is a big hill to climb. I teach Constitution to high school age homeschoolers. I have for 8 years, and one of the things that we learn is that the vast majority of incumbents do very well. They have a machine in place. They have fundraising in place already. And I'm not a and cards on the table. I'm not a huge Tom Tillis fan. But why did you decide to kind of take this on? Because this is a big deal.
Well, actually, I decided this was kind of a, I don't want to say a rushed decision, because it was made with a lot of prayer, Steve. There were other candidates that were going to run against Tom Tillis, and they dropped out at the last minute. And when they did, my wife and I talked about this, we prayed about it, and I said, I am not going to let this man go without a fight in the primary. And I have been fighting him with everything that I can. And the reason for that, Steve, I don't want to be too harsh on Mr. Tillis, but I'm going to say this. As a conservative in the state of North Carolina, I'm tired of being ignored, disappointed, and betrayed by this man. I hate to say this, but you never know where Tom Tillis is going to come down on any given issue. One day he supports the president, the next day he's working against him. One day he's supporting conservative causes. The next day he's playing footsie with Cory Booker. You probably remember back in the Mueller investigation, there was talk about Tillis and Booker introducing a law, legislation to prevent the president from firing Robert Mueller if he chose. And of course, the president would have been within his rights, absolutely, as head of the executive branch to do that. But Tillis is talking to Cory Booker about that. And Steve, first of all, what conservative would do that?
Yeah.
Would even have those kind of conversations with Cory Booker? You know, I don't know about you. I didn't send Tom Tillis to the U.S. Senate for him to go up there and play footsie with Cory Booker, everybody's radical socialist Democrat from New Jersey. I didn't send him there for that. Actually, I sent him there to fight against Mr. Booker's party, which is trying to their best to destroy our country. And so plenty of us picked up the phone and called Tillis's office and gave him an earful. And he backed away from that. But, as he was doing that, he said to us in North Carolina, he said, spare me your righteous indignation. That's a quote. You can look that up, Steve. Spare me your righteous indignation. Well, I'm sorry, Senator Tillis, but if you do something that foolish, you are worthy of our righteous indignation.
Sure.
And
sure.
By golly, I'm glad you got some. And then, of course, everybody remembers about a year ago when the president was trying to find the money to build the border wall. He issued the National Emergency Declaration. Tillis opposed him. He initially opposed him to the point of writing an op-ed for the Washington Post. And again, what kind of a conservative would do that, would fight against the president? You know, the president's number one job is to secure our country. It's to make you and your family safe, Steve, and your listeners and all of their families. That's President Trump's number one job. And he's trying his darndest to get that wall built. And Tillis opposed him initially. Again, a lot of us picked up the phone and called him.
Yeah.
And he eventually changed his position. I mean, he's not called Senator Flip-Flop for nothing.
Yeah, and that's a bizarre that's a bizarre thing about him, as it seems like Senator Tillis is always trying to read the tea leaves a little bit ahead of the game, and that's why you see him flip-flopping around. What have you run into, Larry, as you've talked to people around the state and been running in this primary? Input are you getting from fellow North Carolinians?
Well, that just about every conservative is really disappointed with Senator Tillis. And I hate to say this, Steve, but many to the point where they're saying they will not vote for the man if he is on the ballot in November. I hate to say that.
Yeah, of course.
But plenty of people that I have talked to, they're tired of holding their nose and voting for the lesser of two evils. And I am afraid that if Senator Tillis is on the ballot in November, that seat is at risk. It is greatly at risk. Now, if I'm the nominee in November, which I expect to be, Steve, anybody can look at my website, Larry4NC.com, and a strong conservative can look at my website, can read my platform. They will find nothing there that they will object to, and a lot that they will agree or applaud. I'm a mainstream, consistent, strong conservative, and that is going to be the biggest difference between Tom Tillis and me, Steve. I will be the consistent conservative that Tom Tillis is not. When I'm serving the people of North Carolina in the United States Senate, they will actually know in advance. You're going to know in advance, Steve, how I'm going to vote on every issue, because it will always be the most conservative position, whether it's health care, the economy, education, the Second Amendment, national defense. I will always vote in the most conservative manner. You're never going to have to worry about, what's Holmquist going to do on this one?
Yeah.
Again, with Tillis, we never know. We never know how the guy's going to come down on a given issue. You're not going to have that worry or concern with me.
And that's one of the reasons that you made my list today, Larry, and I appreciate that about you definitely, as well as if I can work with solid conservative flesh, that's great, but I have solid conservative flesh and the Holy Spirit. I'm going to get really excited about that. One more time, your website, then we got to let you go.
Okay, it is Larry4NC.com. Steve, there's only a couple of hours left in voting.
That's right.
Folks, please, if you haven't voted, get to the polls, and I would welcome your support. Larry Holmquist for U.S. Senate.
Thanks, Larry. God bless you. We'll talk to you later. Friends, we'll be right back. So what are we waiting for? Okay, part of me, this is hilarious, what I'm about to play for you. Part of me is like, this is really funny. Part of me is like, this is really sad. But this is just, it is what it is. It is what's out there.
Look, tomorrow's Superstar Tuesday, and I want to thank you all. We hold these truths to be self-evident. All men and women created by, you know the thing.
Okay, so that's Joe Biden, all in the last 24 hours, talking about Super Tuesday, and then we hold these truths to be self-evident, Now that's the second paragraph of the Declaration of Independence. Okay, that's the beginning, and he's on the national stage, wants to be our president, and part of me is like, this is just kind of sad because he's obviously old enough that he's lost some of his faculties. Okay, he's not up to snuff. He's not ready for all this. That's why he has so many gaffes. He's had gaffes over the years, but now it's particularly bad. And for me, it's particularly sad. My dad was 91 when he passed away, and my dad was pretty sharp, but he would start slipping here and there, remembering things and stuff. And to hear this, these kind of mistakes, and people go, oh, well, that's the national stage, blah, 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 pressure. No, this guy's been in the game for a long time. And so with this, I'll just do it one more time.
Look, tomorrow's Superstar Tuesday, and I want to thank you all. We hold these truths to be self-evident. All men and women created by, you know the thing.
Okay, so that's just where we're at, okay? It is what it is. I'm not going to keep banging that drum. That's just what's going on, and it's kind of sad. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That's the second paragraph of the Declaration of Independence. So we've got today, Super Tuesday, all over the country. We've got Alabama, American Samoa, Arkansas, California, Colorado, Maine, Massachusetts, Minnesota, North Carolina, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Texas, Utah, Vermont, and Virginia. Big stakes out there. There is a lot going on. This is a very, very big day, and that's why we're paying attention to it. There's 14 states, 1,347 pledged delegates are on the line. That's 34% of the total available for the whole nation, which is just under 4,000. In California alone today, there's 415. But California, we may not know who gets what, because they're allowed to count in California until April 3rd. So you've got most states with the Democrat Party, and this isn't a constitutional issue. Both parties can do whatever they want in how they run their primary elections. So what's happening there is you have to have a minimum threshold of 15%. You have to get 15%, otherwise you get no delegates. So when you start looking around the country at that, and then you can start doing the math, and of course everybody's doing the math on all this stuff. And I ran one really long article by 538, and they're looking at the math they're coming up with today. Biden will pick up 484, Bloomberg will pick up 222, Sanders 463, and Warren 162. And there's been a big shift for Biden because he had such a blowout victory in South Carolina. And this is going to get a lot crazier before it gets done. And you've got a chance here that we're going to be walking into a brokered convention in July in Milwaukee, and several of Bernie's supporters outright have said, hey, if we don't get our way, we're going to go nutso, like violence kind of nutso. So this is just crazy what's going on out there. But you have to watch today and listen and pay attention. In the South, you're going to see Biden do well. In the North, you're going to see Bernie do well. And Bloomberg, who's spent north of $500 million now, just about all his money he's spent on Super Tuesday today around the state. Around these 14 states. So it's just crazy what's going on right now. We'll just have to pay attention to it and see what's happening. I've got some more I want to talk about on that. But before we do, let's remember what's going on in Nashville. If you hadn't heard, this is really horrendous. I mean, close to downtown Nashville last night, got hit by an enormous tornado. Right now, they're at 22 people dead. All kinds of buildings. The devastation is massive. It's terrible. And it was at night, which makes it even worse. It's heartbreaking, said Governor Bill Lee. We've had a loss of life all across the state. Last night was a reminder of how fragile life is. That's what the Nashville mayor said at a news conference this morning. So that just puts things into perspective. Is this an important presidential race, the presidential primary? We've got a Democratic socialist slash communist who's positioning himself possibly to be the Democrat nominee to run for president of the United States. Those are all big deals. There are matters of life and death on the issue of abortion. There are matters of life and death on the history of the country itself. And I don't want to use too much hyperbole there. But actual lives lost in the middle of the night when nobody expected it brings an eternal perspective. So let's just remember, as we deal with politics, all these things are important. Let's just remember that none of them are as important as the soul of a man or a woman or a boy or a girl, a young child, an unborn baby, a 95-year-old World War II veteran. None of them are as important as the souls of those individuals. So let's make sure in the midst of all this that we keep our gospel perspective, okay? I struggle with that sometimes, and odds are pretty good that you do as well. So I always say this every 2 years when I get on the air because I offer my personal picks here in the great state of North Carolina. These are all statewide races that I offer up. And I do that knowing there's this thing out there called the Johnson Amendment. So the Johnson Amendment's a provision in the U.S. tax code. It's been around since 1954. Prohibits all 501c3 nonprofit organizations from endorsing or opposing political candidates. So this radio ministry, the Steve Noble Show, which is underneath the banner of Call to Action Today, which is how we incorporated as a 501c3. We've been a 501c3 since 2008. Okay, same tax structure as a church, and the Johnson Amendment has been used since 1954 to scare clergy into saying nothing about politicians. You want to talk about pro-life, the issue? Fine. You want to talk about racial reconciliation and civil rights and all? Fine. You can talk about that from the pulpit, but don't you dare mention a candidate. Don't you dare do that. That was the whole point of that, is to shut up the pulpit. And you can imagine why a Democrat would want to shut up the pulpit, right? Unfortunately, for all these years, there's a whole lot. This is just call it intuition, call it personal experience. I'm confident that there are a whole lot of pastors in America that have taken advantage of the Johnson Amendment to stay out of vote for this person, don't vote for that person. This person's more in line with biblical values. This person is way out of line with biblical values because they're afraid to take the heat from their congregation, or people that are saying, hey, you shouldn't mix politics with religion. You shouldn't get in there. That's no place there. Oh, that's ridiculous. Why? Because politicians, the laws they pass, the way they act in office affects all 340 million of your neighbors. And to not care about that is to not care about your neighbor. That's a violation of neighbor love, which is a violation of God love. Okay, first two big commandments when they tried to trick Jesus on that one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Love your neighbor as yourself. Well, not giving a rip about politicians and what happens in elected office, which affects millions and millions and millions of people around the country, is bad neighbor love. Bad neighbor love is sinful. Okay? There's a lot of ways you can sin against your neighbor. This is one of them. So the Johnson Amendment says that. But for years, since 2008, Evan? Since 2008, our friends at the Alliance Defending Freedom have done Pulpit Freedom Sunday. And on Pulpit Freedom Sunday, they have literally several thousand pastors over the last, 12 years that have recorded their sermons comparing candidate A with candidate B based on a biblical standard, saying candidate A then lines up more with the biblical standard than candidate B. Therefore, candidate A is a better choice when it comes to biblical standards. Then they literally mail them to the IRS, and the IRS has done nothing. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Great to be with you. A big day, Super Tuesday, 14 states around the country, and a lot of delegates on the line. We're not going to know what the end game today, but we're going to be a lot closer to it. It's going to be fascinating to watch what happens with Bloomberg, who spent north of $500 million on mostly on Super Tuesday, mostly on today. So it's going to be fascinating. He just wants to get enough so that he can go into the convention in July in Milwaukee. And they've got the Democrat Party has a problem, which is why you've got Hillary Clinton came out and hammering away at Bernie once again. And then Klobuchar and Buttigieg just backed out of the race in the last 48 hours. They both turned around and endorsed Biden. And Biden at a Texas event last night when they came out with that also brought Beto O'Rourke out, out of the graveyard there. And Beto's like, okay, sure, yeah, I'm behind Joe Biden and all that stuff going on. What about Obama? What about Clinton? That'll tell you how desperate they are. If they can get Obama to come out and if they can get Clinton to come out and endorse Joe Biden, that'll show you how afraid they are, how nervous they are about Bernie Sanders, and they should be. So that's going to be fascinating. I'll get to my picks here in North Carolina in a second. And by the way, those are all on Facebook. They're on my personal Facebook page. They're on the radio Facebook page. But I did want to ask, Evan is my intern. My production assistant's been with me for a while. But today was a big day for you.
It was, yeah.
Because?
Because it was my first time voting.
And get this, you're barely getting in under the wire.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Because?
Yeah, my birthday is November 2nd, so I'll be 18 on November 2nd, which is a Monday, the first Monday before
the day before the general election.
Exactly.
So in case you didn't know this, if you turn 18 between the primary and before the general election, you can vote in the primary, but you got to turn 18 before the general election. Then you can get in and you can vote and be a part of that. So had you thought about this previously, or is this
I didn't realize that I could actually vote until it was brought to my attention. So, I went out today and voted, got through the whole process of that, got to experience that. And I think it's important for young people to get out and vote and represent their beliefs.
Yeah.
Especially since people in office are an older generation and they should look at what values they hold and want to see implemented. And
yeah, because all this stuff's going to fall on your lap.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's all going to fall on your lap. Mm-hmm. So how did it feel just to be able to go in there and actually vote, go through the process?
It felt, I was nervous. I didn't realize that I was going to be that nervous, but it was kind of nerve wracking. But once I got to the ballot, it felt very much like a test.
Yeah.
Because it was the Scantron like you see in high school. It's just, I was like, I feel like I'm taking just a like a SAT
yeah.
test.
Well, right that's now. What you, yeah, Evan texted me and he said it felt like a test. And I said, it is.
yeah, it was.
It is a test. Well, I think that's awesome. And do you know many people your age that can vote that are voting?
Not really, no. Most people my age would be like, yeah, I just am not going to vote.
Yeah, who cares? It doesn't matter.
Who cares? I'm just, you know, one less person voting. But I think it's important for everyone to vote and get out there.
Yeah, and I think we have a civic duty to do it. And whether you turn an election on your vote or not really isn't the point. What the point is, the principle is, that it's an incredible privilege.
Yeah,
that
absolutely.
We have to be able to vote as a Christian to want to engage and make a difference in the public realm through voting is like your talent. So mm-hmm. it's you know, what are you doing with the talent that you've been given? We're not talking about playing a guitar in this case. And the guy that buried his talent didn't do anything with it.
Right.
Well, in America, I like to think your vote and your opportunity to vote is like a talent.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you should invest it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, congratulations.
Yeah,
that's
thank
great.
You.
I'm proud of you.
Thank
that's
you
really
so much.
Awesome. You're welcome. And thanks for answering my question today. And your voice sounds great on the radio.
Oh, thank you.
So you're good for that one. All right, cool. So that was Evan and helping us out. And that's inspiring to hear that and gratifying. And so that's really cool and excited about that. So, all right. So here in North Carolina, just so I can follow through, and some people would say I'm violating the Johnson Amendment, which is a federal law. TheSteveNobleShow.com. That's the website. If you want to do that. Go to thestevenobleshow.com. Find me on Facebook, and you can tell the IRS. Because like our friends at Alliance Defending Freedom, and I would have some of the greatest Christian representation in America. We're all hoping one day that the IRS steps out on this. But it's not the law. It's the specter of the law. It's like the shadow. So who's afraid of their shadow? Well, only a fool. So that's why every 2 years, we're always pushing this one. And I really am thankful for Alliance Defending Freedom being out there on the front end of that tip, that spear, to challenge the IRS. Because that if this thing goes to the Supreme Court, it will fall. And then that would be an interesting day, wouldn't it, when pastors actually have the opportunity to endorse candidates and tell you who they think you should vote for based on biblical values. Would they actually do it? Wouldn't that be an interesting test? So here's how I voted today. Not representing any of the stations I'm on. They have nothing to do with this. This is Steve Noble, U.S. citizen, on my show, which happens to be a 501c3. So yeah, this is the Republican ticket here in North Carolina. Yes, I voted for Donald Trump and then Larry Holmquist for the Senate. I voted for Dan Forrest and the governor. I voted for Mark Robinson and lieutenant governor. I voted for Sam Hayes as attorney general. Tim Hogemeyer for auditor. Mike Causey for Commissioner of Insurance, Pearl Burris Floyd for Commissioner of Labor, my buddy E.C. Sykes for Secretary of State, great guy, great godly guy, Superintendent of Public Instruction, Craig Horn, and then two other friends, both have been on this show and also brothers in Christ, but will be great for the state, Fred Von Cannon in House District 35, which is here in the Triangle area, and Gil Pagan, who's in House District 36. So if you want some help, if you want my list, take it or leave it. But it's there on my Facebook pages, okay? So you can go grab it and print it out, and that's my ode to my Chicago background, because I know for a fact that I vote, you know, a few hundred times every 2 years, because I've earned that trust in the Triangle area, being a conservative Christian activist since 2004. And I wish everybody would do their homework and be able to figure it out and spend time on it, but not everybody can. And even sometimes when I'm unsure, I'll ask some very wiser, usually older, conservative Christians that are very knowledgeable about politics, and I'll get their input on the various candidates, and sometimes that sways me one way or the other. But I strongly believe, as a Christian, you have an obligation to vote, to try to love your neighbor well by trying to impact the public realm. And that's why I think it's, and I don't know a lot of pastors that would go this far with me, but I think it's actually a sin to not vote. In this context, in this country, to sit on the sidelines and do nothing, again, I think is a violation of neighbor love. So there you go. There's that. If you're going to turn me in, go ahead. this was from 538. Some really good information here about what's going on today. And this is fascinating, okay? Biden is now twice as likely as Sanders to win a plurality of pledged delegates, according to their primary model, which gives him a 65% chance of doing so, compared with a 34% chance of Sanders. This represents the culmination of a trend that's been underway in a model for about a week. This is turning quickly, okay? This is why six months ago when people are coming out, oh, it's a runaway for Biden, blah, 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 all that stuff. You just like, okay, whatever, go away. You just don't even pay attention to it. So this is all in motion, right? I'm plunking down a bunch of money here betting on this stuff. To be clear, however, in this article, there's still a lot of uncertainty. We've been talking about delegate pluralities, which obscures the fact that the most likely outcome in the model is still that no one wins a majority of pledged delegates, which is moving us down the road to a brokered convention, which means none of the candidates get a majority of the delegates. So you go into the convention. This would be true in the Republican side as well as the Democrat side. You go into the convention in July, Milwaukee in this case, and now they have to start voting. In the first round of voting, the superdelegates can come in, and they can sway it, and then now it's just horse trading. Who do we really want? And they could bring somebody in from the outside. They could say, you know what? Let's go back to our bench. Hey, Hillary. They could go after Michelle Obama. They could whatever. They'd pull them in and say, okay, we're not going to get a consent. We're not going to get to a majority here with all our people. So let's get somebody in from the outside and try to agree on that. That could happen. And given everything that's going on in this country right now, it wouldn't shock me. Still in the overnight polling, the numbers for Bloomberg, and to a slightly lesser extent, Senator Elizabeth Warren, held up better than you might have expected. So Bloomberg's a spoiler in there. Again, he spent north of $500 million, half a billion dollars. In delegate terms, Biden is projected to finish about 375 delegates ahead of Sanders in the average simulation. This is just today. Bloomberg is projected to finish with an average of 555 delegates and Warren with 283 delegates. So Super Tuesday totals, based on 538.com, Biden going to get 484, Bloomberg's going to get 222, Sanders going to get 463, and a Warren will still get 162, which pushes things towards a brokered convention, which we'll see what happens. Now, the scary thing about that, do a little research on the Democrat National Convention in Chicago in 1968, because that got violent. I have no interest in seeing that whatsoever. But this country, as divided as it is, and the fact that you've got a good number of people, millions of people around this country, especially younger people, getting on the bandwagon with Bernie Sanders saying, hey, this democratic socialism thing, man, I'm let's give it a shot. I get my student debt forgiven. That's awesome. I get goodies from the government. That's awesome. I get free health care. That's awesome. We're going to stick it to the rich people. That's awesome. It's like, what is this, the French Revolution? What's going on here? Maybe. That's alarming. That should alarm you. But we'll see what the Democrat Party does with it. This is Steve Noble on The Steve Noble Show. A little bit more about that and then the coronavirus when we come back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble. She blew everything to pieces. Okay, where's my coronavirus thing? I just set it down somewhere. Okay, the coronavirus. This is one of those things, just like the market. Okay, so like today, last time I looked, the Dow was down 600 points, even though the Fed lowered rates today by 50 basis points. So it went from 1.75 to 1.25. Out of nowhere, they did that. So that was a big deal. And you'd think, whoa, that's rocking and rolling, man. And they did that to try to help the market. So what did the market say to that? It's essentially what the market said. Because the market closed down 785 points today. Down 785. Yesterday, it was up a ton. And now, today, down 785. Even though the Feds cut the rates by a half percentage point from 1.75 to 1.25. Okay? Then the Dow craters, 10-year Treasury yields, and this is just kind of this craziness that we're dealing with, fall below 1% for the first time ever. 10-year Treasury yield falls below 1% for the first time ever. That's never happened before. It's an all-time low, 0.927%. And I'm factoring all this because coronavirus, if you don't get sick, if it's nothing serious health-wise, it's certainly serious financially. Now you've got, like, Jim Cramer, kind of wild guy on CNBC, right? Predicts Fed's drastic rate cut will stoke investor fear over coronavirus. On Tuesday morning, the Fed announced a half-point rate cut, with investors worried about the impact of coronavirus. But in the eyes of one prominent market observer, the drastic measure intended to calm Wall Street may actually stoke fear. Appearing Tuesday morning on CNBC, analyst Jim Cramer said that the Fed chair Jay Powers to calm the market are limited, and that ultimately the issue comes down to whether people are able to go about their business as normal despite concerns over the virus. It's terrific Jay is on board, Kramer said. He can do everything he can, but in the end, why go out? Kramer went on to say that he'd previously been optimistic despite the recent Dow freefall, but the Fed's move has caused him to adopt a more cautious posture. Quote, it makes me feel, wow, the weakness must be more than I thought, Kramer said. And I've been trying to be bullish, but I can't. He added, I'm now nervous. I'm more nervous than I was before. So there's that stuff going on out there, circling around the coronavirus. Okay? Kind of nutty. So there's all kinds of articles on the coronavirus. I found this one, which, again, I think that the president's team with the CDC, National Institute of Health, they are the information they're putting out, the press conferences they're having is calm. It's logical. It's just facts. And they're not projecting too much. But I thought there were some interesting things in this particular article. This was in Medium.com by Adam Wren that were thought-provoking. And again, not fear-provoking, thought-provoking. And sitting there going, okay, I can see some ancillary issues that come up as a result of coronavirus that may not be deadly to, it won't be deadly to most people because it's more for older people and people that have compromised health already. But that's not the biggest issue. It is individually, but the overall effect. So it starts with these quotes. It's just the flu. The mortality rate's only 2%. Only 3,000 people have died so far. The only people dying are the old and people already sick. If you're young and healthy, what's there to worry about, right? It turns out an awful lot. Let me explain. This is in the article. So again, I'm not freaking out here. We don't have a spirit of fear, but I think there's some things here that are worthy of consideration as we move down this road, which is largely unknown what's going on, okay? Let's look at the virus. It's called SARS-CoV-2. The illness is called COVID-19, otherwise known as coronavirus. This is the information we have so far based on multiple sources. Incubation period, 2 to 14 days. Transmission methods, respiratory droplets, coughing, sneezing. Fomites, which is infected clothes, furniture, sheets, hair, skin, vehicles, tools. Now listen to this. This is important. So the flu virus can exist for 4 or 5 hours, okay, outside the host. The virus, this one, COVID-19, coronavirus, may persist on surfaces for up to 9 days, and on some surfaces, up to 27 days. So now it's out there a lot longer, okay? Then there's the R-naught, which is for every one person that gets it. Who else is going to get it? How much of a contagion is it? So the R-naught of flu is 1.28. The R-naught of SARS or coronavirus is somewhere between 1.4 and 3.8, but that's questionable. Symptoms, fever, cough, shortness of breath, 20% of patients require hospital treatments, and 20 to 32% of patients hospitalized require intensive care for respiratory support. Okay, so that's important because you go, okay, if there's that many people that require hospital treatment, and if it's highly contagious and can hang around on a doorknob for 9 days, that means you're going to have a whole lot of people that will get it, just like we have the flu, but there's going to be... because that number is so big. Now there's a lot of people that need to go to the hospital for a little bit. And do you have enough hospital beds and staff to take care of it? That's kind of secondary and third level concerns, okay? The death rate. The virus is highly infectious, potentially nearly twice as infectious as the flu. It might be far higher. There isn't any way near enough data yet on that. Infected people could spread the disease for up to 2 weeks before showing symptoms. That's a concern. Some people don't show any symptoms at all and could infect an enormous number of people. As of this morning, there are 80,000 reported cases in China, 3,000 in South Korea, and 1,000 in Italy. In most Western countries, the number is much smaller, 68 in the U.S., 23 in the U.K. And this article is the 29th, okay? So it's already 3 days old. So the numbers are increasing, you know, pretty rapidly. So you've got the first thing to note is that Korea and Italy have been testing much more widely than other countries. Up until recently, most countries have only been testing people that have visited China. So we don't have accurate information here. The second thing to note is that confirmed cases is not the total number of cases in that country. Confirmed cases is the lowest possible number of cases in that country. It's the lower bound of an estimate because that's only what's been confirmed. But with all the other information, you're gonna go, and people don't even show symptoms for up to 2 weeks. So you can't confirm them then. So we're lagging behind reality, okay, in terms of the numbers. The third thing to note is that while the number is relatively small right now, cases outside of China are doubling roughly every 5 days. Okay, so it's infectious, but that's not a problem. It's just like the flu, right? So here's the comparison to the flu. Each year, the flu infects between 2 to 11% of the population. The infectiousness of a disease is measured by its R-naught value. That's a measure of how many people will catch a disease from one infected person. The R-naught value of the flu is 1.28. The R-naught value of COVID-19 is assumed to be between 1.4 and 3.8. However, Dr. Mark Walthelet, research leader at the only institute in the world dedicated exclusively to research on respiratory disease transmission, wrote an article this morning, this is 3 days ago, claiming that the R-naught is being severely underestimated and real value could be between 4.7 and 7. Now you've got a highly aggressive spread rate, okay? Okay, so it might be more infectious than the flu, but that's fine because the morality rate is just 2%, right? All right, let's assume the Chinese data is correct. This is from this article. The formula China is using is current total deaths divided by current confirmed cases. When the widely circulated mortality rate was calculated, 97% of the country's total deaths were in the Hubei province, however you say that. Mortality rate in Wuhan was 4.9%. That was the worst. Mortality rate in the Hubei province was 3.1%. Other provinces was just 0.16%. Mortality rate nationwide in China was 2.1%. When asked why Wuhan was so much higher than the national level, the Chinese official replied that it was for lack of resources, citing as an example that there were only 110 critical care beds in the three designated hospitals where most of the cases were sent. And remember, that's why they built a hospital, a 1,000-bed hospital, I think in like a week. Now that's China, communist China, that can command industry to do whatever it wants. Can we do that anywhere else? So if you're young and healthy, you're probably going to fight the virus off just fine, this article says. 80% of the cases are mild, and if our hospitals hold out, the mortality rate should be the same as the hospitals outside of Hubei, a manageable 0.16%. If you're not young and healthy, you might want to be more careful. The death rate is far higher in older cohorts. It's at least 14.8% in the over 80 group. Why does that matter? Now listen, this is important. The UK has 2.8 million people over the age of 85. The U.S. has 12.6 million people over the age of 80. Trump told people not to worry because 60,000 people a year die of the flu. If just 25% of the U.S. over 80s cohort get infected, given current mortality rates, that's 466,200 deaths in that age group alone. Now, can the healthcare system handle that? It's a good question. So here's towards the end of the article. The problem, the danger doesn't come from the virus. It comes from our underprepared, fragile healthcare systems. A recent paper suggested 80% of all cases are mild, but 20% of those infected required hospitalization, and 14% of those hospitalized required intensive respiratory treatment. Okay, so do we have the capacity? Can you guess the number of people that have contracted the flu this year that needed hospitalization in the U.S.? 0.9%. Okay, see how the math is troubling? So when worrying about earthquakes, we think first of how many people will die from collapsing buildings and falling rubble. Do we think how many people will die due to destroyed hospitals? How many will die because medicine can no longer be delivered on damaged roads? So now we're dealing with secondary and third level problems, okay? Not just the mortality rate of the virus. We know that if the virus becomes widespread, they can't handle it. We think the virus might be much more infectious than the flu, but let's assume that only 8% of the UK in this instance, their population gets infected the same as a severe flu season. The UK population is 67 million people. That's 5.4 million people infected. Current predictions are 80% of them will be mild. They're fine. But if 20% of those people require hospitalization for 3 to 6 weeks, that's 1 million people. Do you know how many beds they have in the national healthcare system in Great Britain? Do you know? Of course you don't. It's 140,000. So the numbers out there are the problem with how many people can get it. And so what do we do? Pray for our elected officials, both here and around the world. Pray that the warm weather coming up in the spring will get rid of this thing. Be prayerful, be watchful, be educated. All the wash your hands stuff, yep. So let's not be ignorant. Let's not just go, fake news. No, keep reading, keep educating yourself. We'll keep paying attention to what's going on with Super Tuesday. We'll talk about all that tomorrow. This is Steve Noble on the Steve Noble Show. Remember, we haven't been given a spirit of fear, but of love, power, and a sound mind. God willing, I'll talk to you again real soon. And like my dad always used to say, ever forward.